But first up, we're going to hear from Dave Lowry from the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. He's a senior marine fish research scientist in the fish management division there. He and his team are responsible for documenting, assessing, and managing the exploitation of over 80 bottom fish species in Puget Sound, including all species of rockfish, flatfish, and sharks. They also conduct substantial habitat mapping work using an ROV and a variety of modeling approaches in an effort to predict where and when various fish can be found. And I'll let Dave tell you what he's going to talk about today. Welcome, Dave.
All right, thank you, Scott. So, as the introduction said, in my position with Fish and Wildlife, myself and my team are responsible for assessing and managing rockfish species and a variety of other bottom fish. And a really important thing that I need to put out there first is that the bailiwick that we work within is Greater Puget Sound or the Southern Salish Sea. So I'm going to talk about the Southern Salish Sea at the South Sound Science Symposium. Whole lot of S's, I hope I'm not slurring yet. The surface area of these waters is pretty big, right? It's over 2,200 square miles. It's a lot of area to cover. And a really important depth stratum that I want to put in your minds as we work through this talk is the 36.6 meter mark. Now, that seems pretty arbitrary, but you'll see in a minute that that's really based on our survey techniques in a lot of ways. It's essentially the limit of our dive depth for scuba divers. And it's limited and modified the way in which we've surveyed these marine resources for decades. Another really interesting thing here that's well worth noting for South Sound is that while much of Puget Sound is actually deep water, as you can see on this map, the dark blue stratum, in South Sound, it's considerably less deep. So we get a lot of shallow, these embayments, Case and Carr and Eld Inlet, all of these shallow areas. The substrate varies, and we talked about a little bit of this when Helen was speaking, but largely South Sound and much of these shallow waters is unconsolidated substrate. It's mud, it's silt, it's mobile substrate. It's not bedrock, and a lot of the bedrock that we do have and the rock piles that we do have in Puget Sound are around the fringes of the basins. So if you look at, if I can get this to work, if you look at some of these areas, there's rock along the ridges and the edges of a lot of these basins. And if you really look at a substrate map, you've got deep water in the middle that is mostly deep mud. You've got some sheer rock along the edges of the basin. And then you may have shallow, unconsolidated substrate again up on the shelves before it drops down these deep rocks. So because of this substrate, because of this structure, because of this depth profile, we have to use a lot of different tools to assess marine fishes. So some of those are scraping right at that shoreline area. It's in eelgrass meadows, it's in kelp beds, it's in these shallow, muddy flats, and that's where we use beach seining. That depth limit that I talked about, that 36.6 meters, mostly, that's scuba depth. That's about 110 feet. It's as deep as we can dive under state regulations, and it's generally where our dive tables tell us that we've got more than a few minutes on the bottom. So we use a lot of diving, scuba diving, to assess these fish. We also use drop cameras. So when we did use drop cameras, we were making a lot of comparisons with our divers, and so most of our drop camera data was also limited to the same depth. Going deeper than that and onto muddy, unconsolidated substrates, we use a lot of bottom trawls. We also use midwater trawls off similar vessels, so we can put big nets out further offshore and deeper into the water, whether they're making contact or just pulling fish out of the water column. And then over the last several years here, we've really been working with remotely operated vehicles. So a lot of the current data that we have on bottom fish abundance, distribution, species composition is from this ROV work. The ROV that we've got right now is the CI Falcon, the yellow critter in the middle there, and that ROV can actually go to the bottom anywhere in Puget Sound. So we can cover the whole of the sound. What we've found over the years, though, is using the ROV on mud is a waste of our time, because what you see is the eyes of a bunch of flatfish that are otherwise buried. And eyes of flatfish, when you run over them with the ROV, look a whole lot like pebbles, bits of glass, pieces of rock, other things that you really can't discriminate. So mostly, we use the ROV on deep rock. We use divers, beach seines, other things in the near shore. We use bottom trawls and midwater trawls in the offshore deep waters. Now, I could show you map after map after map of where we've been, what we've done, what we've covered, all the different habitats, but instead I'm just going to make this blanket statement that since 1987, when we really got going with some of these techniques, We've got literally thousands of hours on the bottom, side to side, top to bottom, covering everything we can. So let's focus a little bit on how we put that all together into some sort of a broader picture. Well, first off, it takes some practice, and it takes some squinting, and it takes some statistical manipulation and gymnastics. You really have to note that not only are these methods surveying different habitat types, but they've also got their own implicit biases, right? There's selectivity issues, there's depth constraints, there's all of these different things, such that no single tool is just the silver bullet that really gets you all of the information you want. But when we use these tools year after year in similar areas across different geographic scopes, we get this kind of gestalt understanding of what's going on with the system. So in South Sound, what has been going on with the system as far as marine fish composition? Well, if you look up until about 2000, what I've done here is I've arrayed these pictures roughly in accordance with biomass. And so what you can see here is that prior to 2000, we had a lot of English sole. That was the number one bottom fish that we encountered with any and every method we used throughout South Puget Sound. We've always had rock sole, and since 2000, we've had more starry flounder than we have English sole. Now, some of this is probably historical fishing impacts. It's a variety of different environmental changes. It's changes in the predator community. It could be any number of things that are driving this, but this is the trend that we see. We've also, until 2000, had ratfish and several species of rockfish, mostly brown and copper rockfish. Earlier, the question came up, what eats kelp crab? Surprise, the answer is copper rockfish. Guess what we don't have in South Sound anymore? Copper rockfish. So there are other species that have been here forever and still persist. Dogfish, herring, buffalo sculpin, and black-bellied eel pout. If you've never heard of black-bellied eel pout, come talk to me later. They're awesome critters. They're all over the place in South Sound, and nobody knows anything about them. There are a few species that we've especially had since 2000. Like I said, starry flounder, big skate have become more prevalent. And then a couple of species that I'll talk about a little bit in a minute here are northern anchovy and Pacific hake, which have become extraordinarily common in just the last couple of years in South Sound. So this may be a little tough to read, but what I've done here is compare all of the different sub-basins that we sample. And what I've got here on the left-hand side is three sub-basins that I'll refer to in a minute as offline sub-basins. These are South Sound, Hood Canal, and Whidbey Island, or the Whidbey Basin to the east side of Whidbey Island. The reason I refer to these as offline is think about flow from the ocean. It comes through the Strait of Juan de Fuca, down through Admiralty Inlet, into the Central Basin, and then it's got to cross over a sill to get into South Sound, Hood Canal, or make a hard corner to go up into Whidbey Basin. So those are a little bit different. And if you look at it, those three sub-basins tend to have a little bit different species composition than the remaining sub-basins. What they tend to have is a lot of English sole, which is that pink bar, which is everywhere, and the dark blue bar is ratfish. Now, if you look at Central Sound is almost entirely flats and rats. That's all that lives there. If you look at some of the other basins, you've got some diversity in there. You've got biomass mixtures, right? But if you look at South Puget Sound, it's got generally lower overall biomass than any area except the San Juans. The reason the San Juans pans out this way is that really this is our bottom trawl data, not all of our data. Our ROV data would actually give a little bit of a bump to all of these, but a much bigger bump proportionally to the San Juan Islands. There's a lot more rock up there for rocky substrate species to be associated with. Another thing that you can see across all of these is generally negative trends for most species. So with regard to marine fish biodiversity, South Sound is generally on par. It's similar to other muddy, shallow, offline sub-basins like Hood Canal, like the Whidbey Basin. Fish density and biomass are generally lower, though, so there are fewer fish proportionally down here. We know that some of that is due to degradation from anthropogenic stressors, including fishing, including siltation, as forestry has generated more runoff into rivers, ocean acidification, a variety of other factors. But we have seen some rebound in some of these overfished species. So we have started to see a few more rockfish here and there. We've started to see English sole coming back slowly. The diversity here is comparable to the Canadian inland waters. Not a surprise, but just worth noting. and there are some long-term negative trends in several species. So in the title of my talk, I said abundance patterns, diversity patterns, and oddities. Let's talk about some of these oddities. Number one, I mentioned anchovy and hake, or whiting. What's going on with those two species? Well, for anchovy, we don't have actually a good method. We don't do systematic midwater trawling or systematic nearshore surface trawling. We've done it a couple of years, but we don't have long-term data. But we do get a lot of notifications about fish kills, especially in Case and Carr Inlet. These are massive fish kills, thousands and thousands of fish. We also have these huge feeding events that have been occurring the last several years. And these involve birds, mammals. Steve's going to talk a bit more about the mammals in a few minutes here. But we know that anchovy have just absolutely exploded in the last couple of years in South Sound. We also know that there's a history of that. It's not a unique thing. It's not the blob. You can't just blame the blob. It does happen episodically over time. For hake, we've actually seen a massive increase also, and that we do have bottom trawl data that we can directly quantify that. There's been a 19.5 time increase in 2016. They absolutely exploded. And again, marine mammal data, you'll see this. You'll see them serving as prey for these species. So these fluxes have broad ecological effects. It's not just a change to the bottom fish community that we're worried about. It's not just me who needs to care about this. It's everything that eats these and the whole ecosystem and the way that these fish interact with everything else. But there's also been some just weird stuff that we don't know what to do with, we don't know how to handle, we don't know what it really means, right? So mola mola, ocean sunfish. Ocean sunfish have been showing up in Puget Sound more prevalently in the last couple of years. We've been getting lots of reports from the ocean all the way down the Strait of Juan de Fuca and into South Sound. This one here was found at Tolmie State Park. Huge fish, weird spot to find it. It's not that they're unheard of here, but we are seeing them more often. And interestingly, of the 30 sightings that we've had reported to us in the last several years, over half have been in South Sound. So there's something about these fish coming all the way from the ocean, all the way around the Horn and into South Sound. We think it's related to the fact that they eat mostly jellyfish. And we've got lots and lots of jellyfish in South Sound right now. We've also had basking sharks in South Sound. We've only had 8 sightings reported to the Department of Fish and Wildlife since 2015 inside Puget Sound. And the photo here is off Edmonds because the person who reported the one off Nisqually didn't get a photo of it. But he's a known shark researcher. He does work for the department. He did kayak right over the top of this thing, and instead of taking a picture, opted to jump in the water with it. I can't blame him. So what's this all mean? We've got bottom fish species in southern Puget Sound that appear to be continuing this slow decline. They're struggling with a lot of different stressors. The ecosystem is changing and being modified in biological and physical ways, and it's definitely affecting them. We do have lots of shrimp down there. We do have lots of other benthic food for them. And for some species, that's contributing to a recovery. Like I said, we are seeing some species that are on the uptick. We've also seen some switches from things like English sole to starry flounder. In the midwater, it seems like some species are actually doing pretty well, and some are doing very well, like hake, like anchovy. We know that the predators are responding to this. The ecosystem is changing. There's more predators and different predators in South Sound than there have been in the past. These feeding aggregations on the anchovy populations the last couple of years in Case and Carr Inlet have involved all kinds of marine mammals, seals, sea lions, humpback whales, all kinds of cool stuff down there. We know that monitoring this is going to be really, really important in the next coming few years. What's really interesting about anchovy, though, especially, is we're not really clear whether this is a source or a sink situation at this point. So these anchovy are here, they're eating all of kind of zooplankton, they're filter feeding out of the water column, and it might be that all of that energy that they're sucking up is being transported out of South Sound by the predators that are eating them and then relocating. So these whales come in and feed, they take all the anchovies, and they move on out. They go out to the open ocean. However, whales poop. Poop is a good source of food for a lot of things. So it may be that you actually get this aggregation and this utilization of these resources that then gets redeposited into the benthic ecosystem. So we're still trying to figure out some of the flux and some of the food web dynamics that are going on there. One question that I get a lot because I work for Department of Fish and Wildlife is, so is South Sound healthy? Can I still fish there? Well, the answer is, yeah, it's within comparative norms based on the historical data that we have available to us. It has been changing, but there are still resources there that are robust and healthy, And yes, you can fish. Granted, you can't fish for rockfish. Those are closed Puget Sound wide. That's still a fishing pressure, and that's a biological issue with rockfish populations just recovering over time. But for flatfish, there's lots of them. They're all over the place. And yes, they're definitely exploitable. So with that, I'll just leave this up there. We've got tons more information, very species-specific information, lots of density profiles, abundance, habitat, all kinds of things that can tie into other work that you guys are doing. By all means, contact me. And otherwise, I think I still have a minute for questions. And thank you very much.
Questions for Dave?
Oh, don't let me off that easy.
So, Dave, thanks. That was great. You mentioned that bottomfish are in a slow decline and the midwater species seem to be doing better. Can you speculate at all why you're seeing those different trajectories in slightly different habitat types?
I would love to speculate. Do we have another hour or two? No.
Shorter than that.
All right. So I think it's a variety of different things. I think it's changes in the planktonic food web, and I would love to have more data to back that up. Julie and the plankton monitoring program that she was talking about with the Salish Sea Marine Survival Project provides some really good information there, but it's limited in scope. It's got a few locations that we've got really good data for. I'd love to have more geographic coverage there. I think it really relates to what's available to eat and who's out there eating it. Anchovy have always been around in South Sound, and in some areas, they're known to spawn on a regular basis. There are times at which they bloom, and it's through this boom and bust cycle, right? So something is happening there in the food web below the anchovy. If they've got enough to eat, they're reproducing, they're spawning, they're doing their thing, and there's lots and lots and lots of them. And the last couple of years here, that's really been carrying forth. How long that's going to last, whether it's temperature related, whether it's food availability related, we're not really sure. I'd love to see more information there, and I really hope that our planktonic work will go on and continue to expand. And I know that DNR has put some money into their budget to help support that next year, into the coming biennium. So I'll leave it at that, because otherwise it gets wildly speculative.
Yeah, I just had a quick question kind of in that same regard on the anchovy with, you were quick to dismiss the blob, but I wondered if in previous anchovy increases the population, if there was a correlation with the temperature, the water temperature.
So we do have a little bit of temperature data. Interestingly, there were historical papers off California that showed that anchovy were more prevalent in cold periods and sardine were more prevalent in hot. Then it flip-flopped. Then they looked at a longer data series and the whole thing broke down. So the reality is almost every marine process is temperature related in some way, shape, or form, right? Certain things do better in certain environments. Whether it's a warm cycle, cold cycle, and that's what's influencing it, whether it's food availability and wind patterns blowing copepods into a very specific bay and that's where they're exploiting their food source, it's really hard to say. We're looking at broader, more integrative approaches like that, but within limitations of staffing and money, as always.
I'm going to jump in, sorry. Question about rockfish in South Sound. So it sounds like we're managing harvest. What's the future for rockfish look like?
Am I out of time?
Yeah,
okay. So the future for rockfish in Puget Sound, we get this question a lot. How long will it be before I can fish on them? How long will it be before the status of these populations is good enough that we can rely on them as an integral part of the ecosystem? The answer is, it depends on the species. Some of these species live to be 100 plus years old. They don't even reproduce until they're in their 30s. We knocked them down in the 70s and 80s. It'll be a while. There are other species that are recovering very quickly. So some of the pelagic rockfishes, like blacks, yellowtails, a lot of people are encountering those all over the place. Those species live into 50, 60, 70 year age range, but they reproduce in their teens. So we're starting to see some recovery in some of those pelagic species. The benthic species, not so much, with the one exception of quillbacks. Why quillbacks? Because if you look anywhere on any substrate, you'll find quillback rockfish. Most other rockfish are associated with rock like their name implies and like they should be, but quillback, just buck that trend. They go anywhere and everywhere, and we find them all over the place. And so I think their population has just always been more robust.
Dave, you mentioned that we lost copper rockfish from South Sound. What knocked them out?
Predominantly fishing, and then we think some shifts in the prey base. We're actually looking right now at trying to pull together the information that we get from our bottom trawl database and really look at shifts in prey composition. We've seen a lot more pink shrimp and a lot fewer kelp crab and Dungeness crab in the last decade or so, or actually 15 to 16 years. So we think it's been prey composition and a combination of fishing. Also, one side effect of rockfish biology is that if you knock down the adults and you don't get a spawning crop for several years, you don't get these fish growing up and being reproductively active, you lose that jackpot recruitment. So if there isn't a big influx of larvae in a given year, you just don't have larvae, you don't have any seed coming back to the system for several years. And we think that that's been the problem. The population was knocked down to a level where it couldn't successfully reproduce and replenish itself.
Regarding the hake that you were talking about, are they juvenile, adults, all size classes?
So hake and Puget Sound are a really crazy thing. If you talk to anybody off California, off Alaska, off anywhere else, they're talking hake. When we talk hake, we're talking hake. The weird thing about that is our hake and their hake are both reproductively viable. We find itty-bitty hake that are ready to go. So we know that there's some fishing selectivity that's driven that in some areas in the past. But nearly every hake we see south of Port Townsend, that's about as big as they get. All right, thank you.